Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
608, how are you? I'm fine, thank you. Well, why don't we start the week? It's going to be brutal. I'm here till Wednesday.
Wait a minute.
What?
Why till Wednesday?
I'm off Thursday and Friday.
Oh, there you go.
You probably think it's about a big golf tournament, don't you?
I'm guessing it's about a big golf tournament, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, actually.
Got it.
Look, it's my only vice. Well, it's one of them. At 6:09, we'll get to my friend Paul Conrad here in just a second. Hope you had a good weekend after the tragedy and travesty of Dallas on Friday. Most of the weekend, news-wise, was caught up in protests around the country. And we've got some things to say about that today. One thing you need to remember is just because you saw a video online doesn't mean you know the story. We say this every time this happens, but the video online has spurred major protests all over the country and extreme statements on both sides of the issue. We know the same thing we knew Friday morning. 99% of cops are good. All good cops hate bad cops. 99% of young black men are good. Those who are trying to achieve success in life and maximize their opportunities, even in the most difficult circumstances, hate those who take the rest of them down.
Mm-hmm.
So the extremes always get the attention. It's a squeaky wheel thing and other things your parents used to say. But we'll get to that throughout the course of the show. And also later on the program, Dean and I will talk about the new Ghostbusters movie and Ray Parker Jr., from the original Ghostbusters. Remember that guy?
Yeah, he wrote the song. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to call?
He'll be on later as well.
Did you see it?
Did
Ghostbusters?
No.
The new one? I didn't either.
No. It's not out yet, is it? Doesn't it open this weekend?
Oh, I thought it came out over the weekend.
No, it opens this weekend.
I saw the ads for it. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
And Dr. Most today, of course, because it's that time of day. It's Monday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Monday. So we're going to talk. Well, I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk. We'll tell you, just have to listen. Dr. Most after 6:30.
Can I tell you something really cool I saw with regard to all the aftermath of the Dallas shootings and, you know, the recent shootings, too, of course, in Louisiana and Minnesota? I covered an event for TV on Saturday in the Austin neighborhood, and it was hosted by Danny Davis and Bobby Rush and Howard Boykin and Robin Kelly. And it was just basically the community coming together to talk about this. So as you walk in, there's a couple of police officers, Chicago police and state police.
Right.
Everybody who walked in that room gave those police officers a hug.
It's tremendous.
And they had about 150 people, Steve, black, white, young, elderly, men, women. They all came up and they were given the police hug. It was just it was very, very moving to see. It's a really cool thing.
We live in a civilized society, and a civilized society has a rule of law, and the rule of law has to be policed by policemen and women. There's a cop in Dallas that is amazing, the police chief in Dallas. You may have seen him on Friday, African-American, by the way. It's important to the story. And if you didn't see any CNN yesterday, he did the Jake Tapper thing on Sunday morning. And I found out some things about this guy I didn't even know, including the fact that after Friday, he was kind of unfortunately used to going through the nightmare that he went through because he lost his brother to gun violence. He lost, was it his father as well? I think it may have been his son.
I think you're right. David Brown, yeah.
And his son, who had bipolar disorder and apparently a drug issue, who shot and killed two before a cop killed him, including shooting a cop. So the guy's got an amazing story, and he is the Clint Eastwood version of cop in that he doesn't say a lot of words, and he'd like it if you said thank you occasionally, but it's not going to stop him from doing his job. Oh, and by the way, we found out over the weekend the average cop in Dallas makes $40,000 a year, and that average cop is going to put on his uniform today and go back to work mm-hmm. and do his job again. $40,000 a year.
How about that?
Knowing he might not come home. It's 6:12 plus a little. How about a little music for Paul Conrad? You got anything, Bennett? If you pick something out, let me hear it. You may be saying, we'll get to it, Steve. Well, Paul's not on the line yet.
Oh, I was wondering.
It's a good song. Let's listen.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.
I wrote this, by the way.
Smile is in the making.
That sounds like that feedback must only mean one thing, Paul Conrad.
Hey!
Well, Connor just remembered he's on the radio.
I did. Yeah. Let me get my shirt back on. Hold on.
I mean, it's not
I apologize. I'm a little off my game.
Why is that?
Well, I'm on my first day back from vacation. I had last week off.
Yeah, where'd you go?
I went to the far northern reaches of the UP of Michigan with my 8-year-old boy.
Yeah. So you had the father-son thing?
Oh, yeah.
I remember you talking about that. How'd that go?
Unbelievably well.
Had a great time.
I tell you what, I am a blessed man.
Of course you are.
It was awesome.
And I love that you had this experience. So what was your favorite part?
You know, he and I rented this ATV and drove like 25 miles on snowmobile trails up to Lake Superior. Let me just say, I have no idea. Like, I'm not good outside. I have no idea what I'm doing. But that was some pretty fun stuff there.
Why would your son at 8 trust you to do that?
Well, that's the beauty of having an 8-year-old. They don't have any option. They think I know everything, right?
Dad will get us there.
But I'm sitting there thinking, what in God's name am I doing? This is not my wheelhouse. But it was fun.
Were you prepared for bear and other things?
I was, yeah. I had my bear urine that I had smeared all over myself.
Right.
Because they say that's how you do it.
You think you'll wear that to work?
I am still wearing it. I'm trying to keep Robin away.
Right.
So far, so good. I'll let you know as the morning goes on.
What an interesting scientific study that would also work on Robin.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating.
It's thicker than you would think it is also. That's what surprised me. You needed to be drinking more water or something.
Oh, that's fantastic. And what's the coolest thing your son said all weekend?
You know, he just the old, I love you, Dad, let's do this next year.
Oh, my God, is that great.
Oh, my goodness.
So jealous. Yeah. So happy for you.
He stayed the whole time. He didn't want to leave early.
His son did leave.
Okay, good.
No, his son came home Friday night.
Yeah. I was there by myself. After he figured out who he was, he's like, I'm getting out of here. I'm stuck with the loser, Dad.
Hi, Mom. Dad can't hear me now.
But he doesn't know.
He just covered me with barrier, and can you pick me up?
It was awesome.
That's amazing. All right, you got to go do sports already.
Yeah, I got to get
Hey, good hit. Talk to you later.
All right, love you.
Okay,
sorry,
bye.
We'll do this
yeah,
next
sure, whatever. All right, that's Paul Conrad.
It was a quickie, but it was good.
6:16. I guess I need a microphone. 6:21. Speaking of sleep, El Chapo's not getting enough sleep in prison. El Chapo's attorney says the lights in his prison cell are on around the clock. The surveillance video and prison staff watch him 24/7. If a dozing Guzman even inadvertently covers his face or crosses his arms, prison guards wake him up, according to the lead defense attorney, Jose Refugio Rodriguez. The conditions that he's being held in are very drastic. He's a victim of cruel and inhumane treatment. I wonder if the people he had decapitated were victims of cruel and inhumane treatment. Because they're probably not having the same sort of sleep issues because he murdered them.
Well, they're dead. Yeah.
This is well below the minimum standards established by the United Nations. This is United Stations? That's an old syndication company I work for. United Nations. This is practically torture. Well, I hope so. Look, here's the thing. And allow me just to pause and pray for a second. God, it's Steve. I'm an imperfect human being. I think we're clear on that. You've seen my work. And I'd like to be a better man than this, but I would hope that El Guzman suffers every second of every day for the rest of his life. And then you can fix me once I get, and by the way, I'm in no hurry, once I get to meet you. In Jesus' name, amen. Yes?
You want to sign off? Thank you, love, Steve. Did you see the picture, though?
Peace out.
There was a rumor, I think Saturday, that El Chapo had escaped or he had left again.
I saw that rumor, yeah.
And then Mexican, the Secretary of Interior, tweeted out a picture of El Chapo sitting in jail saying, yep, he's still here. And it's like they brought him into this room. Nobody else is around. And he's just sitting there kind of staring up. It's very weird.
Well, you would think a guy that's been... who's lived most of his life on booze, hookers, and money, and doing whatever he want, whenever he wanted. This is a pretty cool punishment.
Yeah.
Solitary with the lights on 24/7. And it's just him and his thoughts. So, I like it personally. Last night, or I should say Saturday night, was the final Hamilton in New York City. It's coming to Chicago, as you know, and Lin-Manuel Miranda is done with the show for now. I have a feeling he'll come back to it, but and I'm sure he'll be here for the opening in Chicago, if not for many shows, though it'll be a new cast. How much were tickets for Hamilton Saturday night for its final original cast performance?
Easily $1,000 each.
$1,000. Andy?
$2,400.
Susan Berkus?
$3,000.
$3,000. Bennett?
$4,900.
$1,000,000.
$999.
And then someone does the under bet of $1.
Why $1. It's like the price is right.
$4,900? Where did that come from? By the way, Jake is off today. Sandberg?
$6,100.
It's just $6,100.
What was
it? $20,000. $20,000 if you could get a seat.
Come on.
$20,000 tickets. Yeah.
Per ticket?
Per ticket. Oh. Yeah, so 40 per pair. Who needs two? Who needs two? Guy walking up and down in front of the theater. Hey, man, I got two. Give you 37.5. Nah, I got to get 40. Got to get 40 grand.
Can imagine Costanza and Kramer out there scalping tickets.
That's not good. $40,000 for a pair of tickets.
What's even more shocking, then Lin-Manuel Miranda cut his hair after?
What do you mean
he cut his hair? He cut his hair. You know, he's got the long hair that he puts in a little ponytail because he plays Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
Cut his hair off.
Well, when I left Earth, Wind, and Fire, I cut my afro. So I don't know how that's different. And these lists that pop up on BuzzFeed every 30 seconds is a good one today. The most popular ice cream shop in every state. Most popular ice cream store in Illinois. Anywhere.
Helmer's.
What'd you call them?
Helmer's.
Helmer's. Wilmette.
Helmer's in Wilmette.
Homer.
Homer's in Wilmette. Is it by Helmer's?
Chip. Amazing.
Homer's in Wilmette. Okay. Homer. Andrew? Got nothing?
I got nothing for you.
I'll give you a Dairy Queen. Yeah.
I got to go Rainbow Cone, Southside.
Rainbow Cone. Look at you. Susan, you got one?
I was going to say Dairy Queen.
You know what? Some of these actually
these are
do
weak
come
answers.
At Dairy Queen, but I'm looking for the actual answer without going over.
While you're looking for that answer, I was thinking.
I've got it. I've never heard of this. The plush horse in Palos Park.
Oh, that's the best. That should
Well,
been
yeah,
there.
Apparently. It's right here.
That, no, I'm seriously, Southside, plush horse, awesome off Southwest Highway. Phenomenal. Mary, you got to take
better than
kids
Rainbow
here.
Cone?
Better than, well, equal to Rainbow
Best,
Cone.
Best, look, I love mint chocolate chip. I may have to make a run. Best mint chocolate chip I ever had.
Hands
ever,
down.
Ever, ever. Homemade from scratch every day.
There's so much chocolate in their mint chocolate chip. It's wonderful.
I got more excited for the pretzel cone than I did for my honeymoon.
And the cones have
That's
sprinkles
like, sounds
on them
like something
too.
I would write.
Yeah, it does actually. It does. A little salty to mix with your creamy sweet ice cream. It's a taste combo made for dreams. From a couple of Yelpers. So there you go. These are the exciting stories I wanted to throw in while I had a second. Yes.
I was thinking, you know how John Williams has that show coming up?
Oh, yeah. The Thomas Jefferson thing?
Yes. And you probably don't have a sheet on or maybe you have a sheet on it there. That would be my bad to bring it up. But maybe he can do an updated version, Hamilton style.
I am Thomas Jefferson. 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 Yeah. Yeah. I know this guy a little bit. Because I met him a couple times. You did too. The guy that plays Thomas
Lin-Manuel?
Jefferson.
Lin-Manuel?
No.
Oh, Clay. Yeah, Clay. Clay.
I don't
yeah.
see him doing hip hop.
No, but
doesn't
someone
appear to be a hip hop guy.
Someone who just to give you guys a little bit of a tease on the Hamilton topic. Someone who did do a Hamilton-ish rap for us and for the show and for the conventions. John DeCoss.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
To give you a little tease.
That's true. That's coming up. Mm-hmm. We got to play it this week because next week you'll be in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And the Thomas Jefferson guy actually plays Teddy Roosevelt as well. It's a plug for the Teddy Roosevelt show.
Yes.
Teddy Roosevelt is actually the guy. All right, so we'll give you tell you the details on this. You can get tickets. You can, of course, always go to WGNradio.com/events. This is the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is show number 688 at Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. 312-981-7200. And just quickly, I want to congratulate Eric and Kathy and Steve Harvey. Both have been elected to the Radio Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
So congratulations to all three of them. They'll be vacationing together as well. So, but that's a nice accomplishment. So good for them.
It's very cool. Yeah. Yep.
Woke up after midnight. Both my neck and arms were sore.
Dr. Moses is trying to get this as the graduation march for every med school.
On my upper lip,
There's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my
eye. It's funny, as you know. Highly respected Dr. Mosby. You know, on hold, he's singing the song.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
That's him right there. That wasn't me. Good morning, Dr. Most.
Good morning, Mr. Cochran. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I did. Yeah, I did. Kind of like low-key, but it was very nice.
Well, you deserve a low-key weekend. You work very hard. Got a lot going on.
Lots going on. Yep.
Why are you hesitating? You feel like I'm setting you up for something, don't you?
I know. You, like, need something, I think.
No, not at all.
Oh, good.
No, just saying I respect my friend's hard work. That's all. All right, so why are we talking flu mist this time of year? Because you and I discuss topics every week, and I never, ever, ever think you aren't right on here. But this one, you went flu mist, and I went, okay, why flu mist?
Yeah, how about it? Say, why would we talk about the flu in the middle of July? And probably the big news is because all the mothers and needle phobic patients out there need to know that flu mist will not be available this year.
What?
Yeah, how about it? So it's kind of interesting. You know, we look at flu vaccines, and we always talk about, oh, the flu vaccine.
Hold on, Andrea just left the building.
Yeah, I bet she did, running.
Bye.
All right, so flu vaccines are produced ahead of time, right?
Correct. Yeah, we're right now manufacturing the flu vaccine for next flu season, you know, which will start late September, October. We'll start pushing to get people vaccinated. So what the CDC does, though, is they look every year to say, okay, did we hit the right vaccine? Did we have the right strains? That's one part of it. So that's to make sure that we were somewhat accurate as well as safe. And then they say, okay, how was the body's response to it? Was it effective as well? And unfortunately, what they found as they look back at the last 3 years of flu mist is that the effectiveness has been, I mean, I hate to say it, abysmal, you know, down into the single digits as far as how effective the vaccine was. Whereas the shot itself is 70, 75, 80% effective.
So when you're talking about numbers like that, who are the predictors? Do they use the same analysts that predict on Wall Street?
No. So what they're doing is they're actually looking at true blood tests on individuals who got the vaccines and got the flu mist. So this is a big one because a lot of pediatricians use it. As a matter of fact, when we have a vaccine program across this country, 55% of the school vaccine program used flu mist.
Yeah, and I'm picking on Andrea here, but Andrea, you know, Ross Cochran, my son, is at a needle problem forever. Bill Leff has a well-documented problem with needles. This is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Last season when we were down there giving vaccinations to all you guys, now Andrea stepped it up and took the needle.
Mm-hmm, I did. 2 years in a row.
Yeah, yes, you have. Even you had to go to Scotland once to get away from the other run, but that's what we won't talk
that's
about.
That's right.
You punched Dr. Most in the face as he was injecting you, but he took it like a man.
It was something else.
But for Ross, you know, here's somebody who is going to have a baby and is going to be around a child, and boy, we don't want to give any kids influenza, definitely. So we want to protect the parents as well as the baby. You know, and he stepped up and said, well, you know what? I really hate needles. I'm going to pass out. I'll do the flu mist. Well, little did we know that we gave him the flu mist last year, but the chance of effectiveness was extremely low.
So here's the thing. If you don't know wherever you are and you're a provider and you don't know flu mist isn't coming, how are we going to produce enough to fill the void?
Yeah, from the provider side, you know, we have all the pediatricians, doctor's offices, even Northwestern. We historically would order a lot of flu mist. Well, now we're scrambling a little bit because manufacturers say, okay, I know how much flu mist I've sold in the past. It's, you know, 14 million doses of flu mist. So we know what we've ordered in the past. Now, with that portion of our order being gone, we have to make sure that the people who are making the injectable can step up the production to make sure that we'll have enough to cover those 15 million people.
So this is really going to be an ongoing story that we'll have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, yeah, and this is really right now, it's a more of a heads up to the parents, because you'd rather they know now versus going into the pediatrician's office and saying, well, Timmy got that flu mist, have the pediatrician say, well, disappointingly, we don't have that this year. So it's good for the parents to know. The pediatricians all know. They all heard it. This news came out last week. So it is on the forefront of all the pediatricians' mind and all the individuals who order flu vaccine for health systems and hospitals.
All right, 6:46, we'll break for traffic here. When we come back, Doc, let's talk a little Olympics and Zika virus.
Yeah.
Because I'm considering not going, and as you know, I qualified for the 5-meter freestyle in the pool with floaties. It's an exhibition event this year, but I'm feeling pretty good about my chances. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Doc, on Wednesday, we're going to make our British Open picks, so we're going to need to get a hold of you. So if you're in surgery, maybe stitch up the patient and, you know, have your phone ready.
Now, does Sandberg have to pick first since she won last?
Yeah, that's honors.
Okay.
She's on the tee first. Yep, that's exactly right.
I'm going to copy hers and just change one out.
You think so? I'm not sure that's the right play, but who am I to judge? And we're going to try to connect with Kurt Byram this week as well, because Kurt's our majors connection. Kurt's going to the Olympics, isn't he?
Kurt is. Kurt will be broadcasting the Olympics, which is pretty cool. You know, I think he's looking forward to that. Brother Tom played very well yesterday and finished T14. So the Byram brothers are doing okay.
Hey, he's having a nice season.
Yeah.
The Olympics are less than a month away, and we've, of course, heard a lot of talk about Zika virus and something called, is it microcephaly?
Correct. Yep.
And it's a horrible situation, a virus that affects newborns and causes small heads on babies, amongst other things.
Yes, that's exactly it. You know, it's a birth defect where the head and the brain does not develop as it should, and it's a devastating disease. Very fatal in many, many individuals.
Carried by mosquitoes, the Zika virus is, and for those in the baby-making age range, it can be highly risky because apparently you can carry this as a man or a woman and sexually transmit it, right?
Yeah, and not only that, you can carry it and not even know you have it. That's probably the scarier thing. So, you know, you can have the disease and it can cause you just to have some really minor symptoms, you know, a little bit of fever, a little body ache, but really you don't know that you have it. It's not like, oh, I got this rash, I must have the Zika virus, or I have this one symptom. So many people that have it don't even know that they have been infected.
And coincidentally, with all the world headed for Rio and Brazil, this seems to be one of the, if not the hotspots for it.
It is, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, this disease has been around for a long time, started in the 1950s when it was first identified in Africa, and now has been transmitted into South America, and unfortunately is creeping up towards the United States. Not in the U.S. yet, but creeping up towards it. It'll be here quickly.
Right, and we hear incorrect reports all the time about confirmed Zika cases all over America. Well, that's not true, is it?
No. You know, there are confirmed cases here in the United States, but it's individuals who traveled either to the Caribbean, to South America, to Mexico, and brought that back. So it hasn't been actually true mosquitoes in the United States that have transmitted it. Now, that being said, we see that this mosquito population is moving closer. You know, it's in the Caribbean. It is in mid-Mexico or kind of creeping up towards northern Mexico. So, you know, the U.S. is kind of standing up saying, okay, what are we going to do about this? Because it's only a matter of time before that mosquito migrates to a point of being here in the United States.
It's a long flight for a mosquito to make. These are mosquitoes that transfer to other mosquitoes and so on?
Yes. Yep. That's it.
That's how it gets north.
The population just continues to grow. And unfortunately, sometimes it's actually brought with, like, how did it get from, you know, Africa to South America? That's a long flight, like you say. You know, sometimes it's transmitted because it's in a container. It's in a car. It's in another transportation
boat. Right. We expect instant solutions in America and all of the developed world on stuff like this. Why is it so hard to come up with a vaccination? Too soon? Too fast?
Well, yeah, you know, everybody wants, you know, everyone's been pushing Congress, get a vaccine. The NIH is working on a vaccine, but we have to remember that before we start injecting things into people's body, we want to make sure, just as we talked before, that it's safe and effective. So there's testing right now going on for Zika virus. It's being tested in mice. That's the first thing, you know, one of the first ways we're going to test it. And actually, the response in mice has been very good. After a single vaccine, the mice have developed antibodies against the Zika virus. That's very encouraging. And now we will start to see that advance to a point where it'll be in humans shortly.
All right. So what do we need to do here? Or let me take another step. Not that a lot of people are doing this, but people listening who might be going to Rio for the Olympics, we certainly have people in the audience who are doing that. What do they need to do?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's all prevention down there, right? You're going to try to use mosquito repellents. You're going to try to, you know, stay away from areas that are going to have mosquitoes. But unfortunately, they're down there. It's even though it's the winter season there, coming into spring, they are down there. So you are going to be exposed to it. I'd say probably the biggest thing is any women of childbearing age that are going down there, or men of childbearing age as well, be very, very careful as you come back. You know, there are some areas where we can get testing to see if you've been exposed to it, to see if you have antibodies to the Zika virus. In other words, I didn't have any symptoms, but I still had it. There's a backlog on those testing because we haven't commercialized that yet, but there's still that availability if there's a concern.
We can't make it make sense for the pharmaceutical companies because it's a very small percentage of the population dealing with this, so they can't, from a business standpoint, devote a bunch of money to it, right?
It's very difficult if you really think about this. You know, everyone listening right now, would you get the Zika vaccine? Most people would say, no, really. You know, I'm beyond childbearing age. I'm not going to. Or a lot of these kids are, you know, they still think they're resilient. You know, I'm not going to get that. I don't even get the flu vaccine. And if you think about that, this age population doesn't get the flu vaccine historically very well. And yet it's a disease that can make you very sick for 10 days, can put you in the hospital, can kill you. Where the Zika virus, they say, well, gosh, I'm going to get a couple aches and pains, and you want me to go in and get a flu vaccine? So it'll be interesting to see how the pharmaceutical companies do this, because it's a small population, so they can't make it up on volume, and you have a population that is kind of restricted. Any woman of childbearing age will run to get in line for it. But all others are going to be saying, why do I need it?
Doc, I wanted to ask you, I was at a family event yesterday, and I had two separate people say that they had just gotten over shingles. And then they were going
and
back and
forth. And they shook your hand and hugged you?
Well, that's the question. They were saying, oh, one said it's not contagious, and the other said, well, it's only contagious if you haven't had the chicken pox vaccine. So nobody really knew what was the case.
Yeah, there is.
Is it contagious?
This is family reunion season.
Yeah.
Maybe no one should touch each other.
Yeah. It's interesting, Andre. My brother called me yesterday, and he has shingles, so we started him on some medication.
Which brother?
Brad. David. David.
Do you remember which brothers they are? David's the youngest one.
Yeah. David's the youngest, yes.
I'll give you a chart if you need help.
You know him better than I. No, but almost everyone has had chickenpox, and many people have been vaccinated against chickenpox. So the virus from chickenpox actually lives in our body. So if you've been vaccinated, you can still have the virus living in your body. And when it comes out, when your immune system is down or you're under a lot of stress, it'll come out, and it'll come out in the form of shingles. Stays on one side of your body, follows one dermatome, one pattern. You'll notice it's a linear kind of thing because it's going tracking along a nerve. It's unfortunately the vesicular, in other words, has little vesicles. And when those vesicles break, there's live virus there. So you certainly don't want to be around anybody while there's still vesicles. Once they're crusted over and closed and it's just red and inflamed, you're not contagious. But all those other times, you certainly want to stay away from people.
I think in general in life, as a rule we can live by, if you're oozing, stay away from people.
Yes, that's a very good, that should be.
This is a general rule from today's show.
Yes.
Those who ooze currently, or don't be hugging people that you don't need to be hugging.
Or are crusted.
Well, crusted apparently is good.
Crusted's okay. Crusted means that they're dead and it's just the virus isn't there anymore and it's just kind of healing at that point.
Yeah, we've ruined enough breakfast. Doc, thank you for the information as always, and best of luck to all of us. You fighting a cold again?
Yeah, I am. I don't know whether it's a cold or it just got... this allergy kicked in again. I'm trying to figure out where I was.
Got to stop hanging around sick people.
Yes, I do.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. That's Dr. Kevin Most and Best of David, obviously. A couple minutes before 7, back after this on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I want to thank Andy Mazur for playing the guitar on all the bump music this morning. Thank you, Andy.
My pleasure.
Mary Sandberg joins us in studio. Did you survive your weekend with family visiting?
Barely.
Well, what happened?
Well, we had Pat's brother, my future brother-in-law, mm-hmm. his wife.
This world-famous Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsman.
Yes. So Dan Boyle is mm-hmm. the second world-famous mm-hmm. brother.
Are you going to be Mary Boyle?
Yes. I mean, I think we're going to go Mary Sandberg Boyle. No hyphen.
No, it'd be a long name. Sandberg would be your middle name.
Yes.
Yes. But you're going to be professionally Mary Sandberg. Or are you switching your name to Mary Boyle?
You know, I don't know what to do on that. This is very important. I don't talk about it at all. And at, we were watching Faraday, and who was just on?
David Faraday on the Golf Channel.
Yes. And what's her name? The golfer. She's so cute.
Annika?
No, I can't think of her name. But anyway, she's married, and she has her husband's name. And he's like, if it's good enough for her to take her husband. Like, he's all defensive about his name. I never said I wasn't taking his name.
I think it should be, you know, a mutual choice. Look, tradition is fine. But if a woman doesn't want to take a man's name, then deal with it.
Yeah. Most of the women here, you know, professionally in broadcasting, use their maiden names. Like Vandeveld, mm-hmm. Pilak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I'm all that important that it matters if people are like, what happened to Mary Sandberg? Did she disappear?
Yeah, but I think it's a more selfish concern on my part, because since Vandeveld is here mm-hmm. and I can't call you Mary
yes.
and I call you Sandberg, I can't call you Boyle.
I mean, even like Dr. Most called, he said to Sandberg, no. Yeah, I'm good with you calling me Sandberg. I like it.
Because you'll always be Sandberg.
But I also like MB, because MB means business, makes sense, because as you know, we're all afraid of you. Yeah. All right, so anyway, so the family's in your house.
The family, and they have an 8-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter.
Oh, how sweet.
Yes, and we have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Oh, how adorable.
And so I'm under the...
when did they arrive?
They arrived on Wednesday.
What time Wednesday did you lose your mind?
They arrived at 2, and at 2:38, I may have sent a few text messages.
Oh, no.
But everything went fairly well.
Yeah. You know, they are the type of family that's a house taker over type. You know, there's some people that come and you barely know they're there.
Yeah.
And then there's the other ones, and they're the other ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they were...
They make themselves very comfortable.
Yes. And now, if everyone could understand my position, Pat and I have a home. Pat works nights. I work mornings. We get the kids part-time. I'm alone a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I alone time, I'm very well suited for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I get overwhelmed when Pat's home. And then...
So you lay in another 20 or 30. Thank God you're not Greek. Can you imagine if she was Greek?
Oh my God.
Surrounded by people all the time?
And adults aren't meant to be in the same house together. It just isn't natural, even barely with your spouse. So...
I should say that you have had a longstanding policy of family needs to stay outside on the lawn.
Yes.
Yes, I think that's exactly it.
Yes. So it was okay. And then this weekend, we were going up to Grand Geneva, all of us, us and our kids and them and their kids. And so I was talking to you after the show on mm-hmm. Friday, mm-hmm. about 10:45.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, it's not going to be so bad. And then I got a call from Pat, and he said, hey, how you doing? Good. He doesn't usually call me that quick after the show, knowing we're doing intense post-show meetings.
That's exactly right. A lot to do.
So Kennedy, which is a 3-year-old.
That's the little girl?
Yep.
Cute little girl. Have you seen the pictures?
No.
Ah, adorable.
She's cute. She got a hold of a ballpoint pen.
Uh-oh.
And she has written all over the white sofa.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Do we have crime scene photographs?
You know what? I did not take a picture because it's so horrible that I couldn't even. And so I said, I hung up the phone and I said, oh, my goodness, the child has written on my couch. And you said, you got to get out of here.
What did she write on the couch?
Lines and scribbles. And
okay.
And it's now Pat left the pen out.
She didn't write like no ice cream, no peace, nothing
no,
like
no.
that.
No. no messages or anything. Okay. He left the pen out. And we're not used to having a 3-year-old around.
So you childproof the entire house, but one pen. That's the thing. Little kids will find the one thing they can do the most
right,
damage.
He left it on like the little end table on the end of the couch, which is her height. You know, it's right.
Sure.
And they were like, Amy and Dan are like, she never writes on furniture at home.
Oh, of course she doesn't.
Of course she doesn't.
Right? So did they offer to pay for the cleaning?
They were all freaking out. I wasn't there, of course. And Catherine was in the room, but she was on her phone. So, you know, she doesn't see anything because when their kids are on the phone, they don't notice anything going on.
Wait, Catherine's the mom?
No, Catherine is our 12-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so she felt bad. But they were freaking out, and Pat said, don't touch it till Mary gets here because I wouldn't want to...
Put crime scene tape
on. I don't even know. What do you do to get pan out of couch fabric?
Well, I don't know.
When you set the couch on fire and hope for the best?
That's probably what we're going to end up doing. Online it said to use some vinegar. So we tried that. Stanley Steamer's coming today because it's now we've got a brown ring. You know, like whenever you put water on white, it's, you know, like it doesn't work well. And when I was in high school, I wore a uniform and we wore a lot of white Oxford shirts. And if you got pen on your shirt, we'd spray it with hairspray. But I wasn't going to take hairspray to the couch,
no.
So because it helps the stain come.
I think the family needs to buy you a new couch.
I think so too.
They offered to pay for the cleaning. However, after we head to Lake Geneva, there's no mention of the couch once. The child did apologize to me, so there's that.
Well, it's the kid's three.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
The kid's position
no,
to apologize.
But the Dan, I'm like, are they going to say anything like at all? Because I am barely sleeping because all I can think about is my white couch at home.
I'd be the same way. No, you know what? I would be the same way. You have your house and you keep it neat and you keep it nice and they have ink on your
white couch. I get mad at our
kids
when there's like a blanket on the floor. I'm like, how's this blanket on the floor? You know, I go ballistic.
And that's why you beat them with hangers.
Yeah. And yes. So,
Mommy dearest.
So on Sunday when we were saying goodbye at Grand Geneva, I said to Pat, I said, hey, I need you to be home between 12 and 4 because Stanley Steamer is coming to do the couch. And they're like, oh, yeah, the couch. Let us know.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that they were... They feel bad, but they, you know, they had a million things going on.
But so. What happens if Stanley Steamer can't fix the stain?
This is where, I mean, they said we would buy a new couch. Now, who would take a new couch? I mean, I don't know. I'm praying.
That they could get it out.
Does God have a division for couches?
Hello,
probably.
God.
Yeah.
Hello, God, it's me, Sandberg.
Yeah, yeah. how bad is the, is it bad because it's you or is it bad because it's bad?
It's probably worse because it's me. It's bad, though. I mean, it's on the arm, and so...
What, would the kid write her biography? What was she doing?
I don't know.
It all started for me when I was born.
She was pressing really hard, because there's, like, it's very...
Well, you got to press hard to get it to show up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And she did a whole, you know,
she's making you a picture. She's making you a picture.
Oh, man. She was coloring at the restaurant.
Can you
I was watching her on the weekend. I'm like,
Can you take like a chainsaw, cut the arm off, and hang it on the refrigerator where the other kids' drawings go?
Yeah. I'm guessing we could get it reupholstered, but that's not going to be an inexpensive.
No.
It's just like Walter E. Smith. It's like, I love
it. Oh, that. Come on. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. So it's not even like, you know, a lesser.
Really?
A cheap couch.
Yeah.
So you finally decide to overspend on the couch, and you do, and the cute little kid writes her manifesto on it.
Yes. So.
All right. So this is the text question. My family ruined my house.
Yeah.
How did your family ruin your house? 312-981-7200. What did your family do to your house? And more importantly to Sandberg, did they pay? When are you going to see these people again?
Undetermined. There was Pat said, you know, Thanksgiving. Blah. I'm like, oh no, Thanksgiving is not happening.
Thanksgiving.
Your kids are older at what, 12 and 8?
12 and 9.
12 and 9.
Yeah.
So they can't really get away with the cute kid didn't know what they were doing.
No.
What if Pat were to go to his brother?
Yes.
What if Pat were to go to his brother's house and pretend he was drunk and start writing on the walls? I mean, just to even the score.
Oh, God.
I'm not usually an eye for an eye type, but I have a little bit of.
No,
anger inside of me that might, you know,
I completely get her frustration.
Kids,
that's
man.
Where I was like, yeah. Spanking. Should we introduce spanking this weekend with this?
Oh, I thought you were talking about you and Pat.
No.
It's 7:21. All right, we got to take a quick break for traffic. We'll come back. My family ruined my house. 312-981-7200. What did your family do to your house? And what was the resolution? Family. Got to keep in the yard. Keep in the yard. Got some great text coming in. By the way, it was a little pricey, but I had all of my furniture made out of dry erase boards.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Good idea.
Because you got little kids around, you know. We continue with Dan Zak from the Washington Post. Book's called Almighty Courage, Resistance, and Existential Peril in the Nuclear Age. Why are you talking about nukes on a beautiful summer morning? Well, because, A, I want to give you one more thing to worry about, and secondarily... with the Iran nuclear deal and with domestic terrorism in this country, this book will make the little tiny hairs all over your body stand on end when you realize we got a lot of nuclear stuff sitting around and the security ain't so great. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Steve.
The book, again, called Almighty. Get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one, probably when you're breaking into a nuclear facility. That was kind of the core premise, right? These three older guys that broke into the facility?
Yeah, well, it was two middle-aged guys and one 82-year-old Catholic nun. And so it was the three of them who broke into this weapons facility in East Tennessee in the middle of the night about 4 years ago. And it was kind of one of the more serious breaches of domestic nuclear security ever.
And as a child of the 70s, you know, watching the news with Walter Cronkite, where you had these little badly drawn by today's standards cartoon graphics of how many rockets we had versus how many rockets Russia had, we have a lot of nuclear material. And what we know is it doesn't take a lot to wipe out a country. So why do we have so much of this sitting around?
Well, because nuclear weapons are still kind of the foundation of our national security. I mean, so you remember the 80s then, you know, the Reagan arms buildup,
yeah,
kind of the last gasp of the Cold War. And then all of a sudden the Cold War ended and kind of nuclear weapons receded from popular consciousness. You know, I'm more child of the 90s. I was born in 83, so I don't really remember the wall coming down. And so, you know, nuclear weapons don't have salience in my life like people who are used to duck and cover, used to, you know, the Reagan arms buildup. But, you know, even though nuclear weapons have gone down in number, they haven't gone away. And that's because they remain central to our national security. So not only do we still have, you know, about 7,000 warheads, just the U.S. alone, but we have all this material that fuels these bombs. And the site that these three people broke into is the site that has all the highly enriched uranium that fuels the bombs.
Right. But, I come back to that same point, though. And again, the book's called Almighty, Dan Zak from The Washington Post. In the worst case scenario, to wipe out the world, we don't need that much stuff.
No. I mean, some scientists say all it takes is a couple hundred detonations and you've got enough, ash in the air to destroy global agriculture and that's it. You know, you'd think that we'd only need enough nuclear weapons to destroy the world once, but there's enough in the world, about, just over 15,000 to do that more than once. And I think that is just residual madness from the Cold War. You know, we're not going to reduce the number we have as long as Russia has that much.
But the math is crazy, right? Because it doesn't matter beyond a certain number. It doesn't matter if they have 15,000 and we have 3,000. It doesn't make them stronger.
Right, that's what's so vexing, and that's why a lot of people call nuclear weapons political weapons, not actual weapons of war. You know, we use them as a bargaining chip to say, hey, Russia, you have to come down too, and we're not going to budge until you budge, and of course the Russians say the same thing about us. So you could argue that legacy of the Cold War is still very much around. It's still very much you can't have more than we do, and we're not going to go down until you do, and we're going to hold you to that. And so we have these enormous stockpiles still that are outdated and have no practical use in war.
And the great danger of Russia having all that they have and we having all that we have and domestic and international terrorism is bad guys who wouldn't be responsible with handling it, not that we've been exceptionally responsible, but the bad guys can get to it. They may not, but they can.
Right. I mean, the concerns have always been, you know, nuclear material that's still in former Soviet sites, security in India and Pakistan, both of whom have nuclear arsenals, concern about that. And then, of course, when you have three, you know, middle-aged or elderly pacifists getting right up to your building that has all your enriched uranium, that raises questions about, is everything that we have in the U.S., is that all, locked down? I mean, it would be hard for a terrorist group to make the material for nuclear weapons. I mean, they'd have to steal it. And so it better be 100% secure.
So Sister Megan was the nun, right, if I remember from the
Correct.
Book? So Sister Megan, at this age, is just trying to do the right thing by her view of the world, as are these others. But we live in a world now that's loud and noisy, and news cycles last 12 hours or 24 hours, and protests being what they are, and you just mentioned it, being a child of the 90s and not remembering, the social significance of a nuclear arms race. How much sticking power does this discussion have? I mean, and by the way, this is why I think your book's really important for people to see.
Well, you know, it's hard. I think people, you know, don't think about nuclear weapons that much. Well, we think about other people's nuclear weapons. You know, we think about North Korea testing. You know, North Korea's tested this year already nuclear weapons. We think of the nuclear weapons that Iran doesn't have at this point. But we don't think about what we as a country and what the other world powers are doing with them. And so the sticking power, I think, is not great. I think it takes events like this break-in to capture the imagination of people who would normally not think about nuclear weapons, A, because of, you know, the kind of global context and the Cold War being over for 25 years, but also, you know, I think nuclear weapons are very abstract in people's minds at this point. You know, they've not been used in war in 71 years. They've not been tested above ground since the 60s. And so I think they recede from the popular consciousness, and the sheer immensity of the consequences of the use of them, I think, is abstract in people's minds. And so I think it's difficult to get people to pay attention to this topic for those reasons.
Two old guys and an elderly nun break into a nuclear facility. Sounds like a setup for a joke, but it ain't that funny, kids. How is this not a movie?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it seems like a caper, for sure. You'd have to ask Hollywood. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think most of our thrillers and action adventure movies center around zombies now, or alien invasion, or you know, global disease or something. You know, it's not like during the Cold War when we had all these movies about you know the bomb or about the Soviets. And I think popular culture is reflective of national anxiety. And right now we're more concerned about, you know, climate change, or we're concerned about disease, or we're concerned about terrorism. But we're not really concerned about these giant stockpiles that still exist.
Yeah, and as much as we should be concerned about kooky Kim Jong-un, you need to be concerned about the amount of nuclear stuff sitting around in this country and the inability to secure it. Dan, thanks, and nice job on the book. Again, it's called Almighty. Download it wherever you do those sorts of things. And also, pick it up. You know, you can actually get, listen to this book. That's a solid book, baby.
It's a big book.
That is a solid book. Use this for a weapon on mass transit, I'm telling you. It's Almighty by Dan Zeck. Thank you, sir.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
All right, 7:43 now. Heather McDonald standing by, fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Her book, The War on Cops, How the New Attack on Law and Order Makes Everyone Less Safe. Seems like common sense to me, but common sense ain't so common. Here's Heather. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I like the fact that you approach this from a statistical analysis standpoint. It's not just anecdotal, because I'm king of the anecdote. But I do think you need to combine the two. You need to combine real-world statistical facts along with anecdotal evidence of what we need to live in a society of laws.
Well, it's too bad the president can't get his statistics right, because on Thursday night, before the Dallas mayhem massacres, he threw out some statistics that he tried to prove the Black Lives Matter narrative that the cops are lethally racist, and they were completely absurd.
Tell me what we know by the numbers.
We know that blacks are less likely to be killed by the police than their crime rates would predict. We know that a greater percentage of white and Hispanic homicide victims are killed by police officers than black homicide victims. 12% of all white and Hispanic homicide victims are killed by police, compared to 4% of black homicide victims. We know that a police officer is 18 and a half times more likely to be killed by a black male than an unarmed black male is to be killed by a police officer. And we know, as you know in Chicago now better than anybody else, that when the police back off of proactive policing, which is what they're doing nationwide now under the onslaught of Black Lives Matter lies and demagoguery, black lives are taken. You know, over 2,000 shootings in Chicago this year, 9 of those committed by the cops. That's 0.4% of people shot by the police in Chicago. It's not the police who are killing black males today. It's other black males.
The good people of the worst neighborhoods in those dozen or so neighborhoods around Chicago where the vast, vast majority of this violence takes place, well, I'll tell you the same thing. They want more cops on the street. They want to have a chance to live their lives and live their lives okay and not have to worry about their kids going to school.
You're absolutely right, Steve. I cannot go to an inner city meeting when I don't hear people say, I love the cops. I want them. You arrest the dealers. They're back on the street the next day. Why can't you keep them off the corner? There's kids hanging out in my stoop, smoking weed and selling drugs. I'm terrified to go outside. This is the constant complaint that the people hear, that the police hear from the law-abiding residents of those communities.
There's a culpability in the media, too, with this, however, and that is, when did it become okay to show unvetted Facebook Live video and YouTube video or cell phone video of any alleged crime that gets committed and then run it out on CNN and whoever else is fact hour after hour, day after day, until you make sure there's a riot going on?
You're absolutely right. We, you know, these videos do not give us the full picture. And officers now, that's part of the reason why they are backing off of policing, because the use of force by officers is never pretty. And there's been some bad shootings, no question. I think Laquan McDonald was horrific, and I think the police department made a big mistake in not getting the facts out early.
Absolutely.
But the overwhelming majority of times that the cops use force is in response to resistance, and yet the media is utterly wedded to the Black Lives Matter narrative, and they are completely complicitous in the violence that we're seeing now.
Yeah, and there's a sickness in society that, frankly, it was probably always been there, but social media has allowed it to come out, and it's sad to me. And that is this woman who runs a Facebook Live video of this encounter with a cop, and her boyfriend is killed while her 4-year-old sits in the back seat. We now know that this boyfriend had 50 or more traffic stops, citations. We also know that he'd been driving without a license over and over again. When you pull over, this is basic knowledge, I think, for most people. When a cop pulls somebody over and runs a plate, they'll get a history of that person. That's not profiling. That's law and order. And when you go up to the car, if you are a legal conceal and carry gun owner, and the cop tells you, again, standard operating procedure for police, remove your hands from the car. Stick your hands out of the window. And then he opens the door. You get out of the car. He disarms you. When you reach for the gun that you say you have, even if this turns out that he was reaching for the gun to give the gun to the cop, you're not listening to the directive of the cop. The cop has been trained to act in a way to end the situation and save his own life as well in that circumstance. So until we know different, that's what we know of the story, and that's the truth of that video.
Well, I'm glad you're pushing back against this, Steve, because most people are not, and we don't even know everything. I mean, we don't know what actually happened. And if that had been a white driver that also appeared possibly, again, we don't know, but it may be that from the officer's perspective, he was not complying with demands and was not, and looked to be going for his gun. He most likely would have been shot, too. Let's remember, 50% of all people shot by the police fatally each year are white. We don't hear about those.
Right.
We don't talk about lives mattering. We don't hear about those people. It's only when a black person is shot. But as I say, black people are shot at a lower rate than would be predicted by their crime rates. 26% about of all fatal police shootings have black suspects. But blacks commit about 2/3 of all violent crime in the nation's biggest cities and counties, even though they're 15% of the population there. So, you know, we have to understand policing in the context of crime and where officers are going to try and save lives.
That's the immediate solution to this, is for an understanding of what cops do every day, and to understand that 99% of cops are good cops thing is not a cliche. It's actually out there. They're doing the job. And this talk of demilitarizing the police, stop it. The questions that came up of how the Dallas police chief ended the circumstance on Friday after five of his own were killed. Think about this for a second. Five cops are killed. They pin down this gunman in a parking garage, and they try to negotiate with him not only to save their lives, to save his life. And when he doesn't do it, they took the action they needed to because he was in a position where they couldn't get a clear shot at him, and they knew at any point he could run out and shoot at them. And there are actual people around the country this weekend, again, sitting in the safety of their home at their computer, going, how could you blow another human being up? I'm glad they did. They ended it.
Well, that, this should be a teaching moment, Steve, as to how irrational the Black Lives Matter movement is. And there's probably some libertarians in there as well, if you talk about people at their computers that are just fundamentally in their bones anti-cop, and there's nothing that's going to make a difference. And I had the same reaction to people grousing, blaming riot gear for producing riots. You know, people say, oh, well, it was the police that showed up in riot gear that made us destroy livelihoods of hundreds of people. You don't get to choose your weapon that the police use if you are destroying property and destroying civilization.
It's Heather McDonald. Where do we follow you, and where do we get the book?
The book, The War on Cops, is available in your local bookstores. It's available on Amazon, and you can Google me. I think the Manhattan Institute has my writings. That's manhattan-institute.org.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Heather McDonald. It's the Steve Cochran Show continuing now. Look, racism in all forms is nothing but painful and damaging. Whether you're a black person, a white person, a yellow person, a brown person, racism doesn't help anything. Racism makes everything worse. But all the screaming on both sides of the issue, you know what it is? It's just like the politics we talk about all the time. The far right and the far left aren't the solution. They're the problem. The extreme views on both of this aren't the solution. It's the problem.
We have to meet in the middle. We really do. But she is right, though. Social media, and you brought this point up, too. Social media is just run amok nowadays. That video, the initial video, was Facebook Live.
Yeah.
The Minneapolis shooting.
And I actually heard people talking about the media this weekend going, well, thank God it got out, because there's no way regular news organizations would have run it. Well, of course not. Why would that be okay to put on TV?
Well, that being said, too, though, IPRA here in Chicago, they were the ones who decided that all of the police-related stops, you know, videos should be released. And those are online. Anybody can see those.
I just wish everybody would have the opportunity to do a ride-along with a cop to see what a cop really does. And for the amount of money they're paid for, we talked about Dallas cops making 40 grand a year, and they're going back to work this morning and doing the same thing they were doing Friday or Thursday morning before all hell broke loose. It's a very difficult job, and there are imperfect people in the police department as well. But we need more black fathers to stay in their homes. We need more jobs and opportunities for kids in bad neighborhoods. And we need more cops speaking out about bad cops to get rid of those bad cops and clean up the effort. I know it's more rational views for me.
I saw a piece of reporting, if I may interject here, over the weekend where civil rights leaders, I think in Los Angeles, went along with police and they did the training for shooting, active shooters. And, you know, you use fake bullets, but you know, they had to shoot people. And afterwards, they were like, wow, you do only have seconds to decide what's going to happen. And I think if more people went through that training, they'd see just, you know, it happens in an instant.
Andre and I went through this with the FBI Citizens Academy. Yeah. We saw Ross Rice last week, as a matter of fact. And at the FBI Citizens Academy, we were amazed at how many shots you squeeze off in a moment because you are stopping the situation from going. Now, in your case, you killed a lamp.
And a microwave and a DVD player, to
right.
be fair.
And who did I get?
You were one shot Cochran.
I got the bad guy.
And I shot. But the crazy thing is, he said, how many times did you think you fired? And what did I say, six?
Yeah, wasn't it 13?
13.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
You don't know till you know, and you should thank God that there are people in that position so you don't have to be.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should.
Hello, Dean.
Good morning.
How are you?
Delightful.
Welcome back from Los Angeles. And Ghostbusters movie opens this week, right?
It opens this coming Friday.
Here's what's coming up. We'll talk about rock stars in rehab, old rock stars collapsing on stage, Snoop Dogg news. There's lots of Snoop Dogg news, including a very funny circumstance on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh.
Do you know about this?
I don't.
Well, you'll have time to Google
it
and act like you knew it.
Yeah, I'll pretend like I know.
Lin-Manuel Miranda did his final Hamilton performance, and yeah, you could have been there for $20,000 a seat.
It's a bargain.
And Dean's review of Ghostbusters. Can you do that today?
That I'm giving it a B plus, you mean, or a B rather?
Apparently, you can.
That I liked it very much.
Apparently, you can. All right, so Sandberg, are you afraid of Sandberg like we are?
No. I ain't afraid of no Sandbergs.
He doesn't know her well enough yet.
Yeah, he doesn't.
I ain't afraid of no Sandbergs.
Dean may do some filling on the show with you guys.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah. So
what?
Yeah, yeah. I just volunteered him. And when he does...
Do my bosses here at the TV station know that?
Why would you listen to them?
Okay.
Who's more important in your world, me or the people that employ you at Channel 9?
You.
See? So anyway, Sandberg produces the show, and she's kind of an iron fist.
Okay.
Because I knew that because she hit me, and she actually had an iron fist.
It was iron, yeah. They were out of the regular prosthetic ones.
And so she had family visiting last week, including an adorable three-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And the adorable three-year-old wrote on her white couch.
Oh.
With a pen, Dean.
Yeah.
A ballpoint pen.
Oh.
But the kid's an artist. I mean, she did like this full, really beautiful painting.
Is the kid still alive?
Well, yeah,
she
it's
is.
Not the kid's fault. The kid's three.
Parents were bold enough to have her apologize to me right away when I walked in before I saw the damage.
How do you react to something? Because you want to be like, you know, that she's just three, it's just a child. But at the same time.
It's a white couch.
As my mother would say, I want to wring her neck.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Mary made the family stay on the lawn for the rest of the weekend. So here's some of the texters. Because the question, Dean, is my family ruined my house? You know, your family visiting?
Yeah.
312 texter. Mary needs to stay single. Well, it looks like he can't get married. The listeners
have decided.
Because, Dean,
it's my future brother-in-law and his wife and children.
Oh, see, that makes it so hard.
847, my niece painted my mom's bathroom with nail polish. Well, imagine how long it took him to come up with the color. Probably wanted to go to a lot of different stores. 6308, same thing happened when our child took a pen to a friend's couch in France. Maybe kick him out of the country? The owner used a product called Spot Shot. And had good results. See if somebody can find you that. 219, my 17-year-old nephew was cat-sitting while I was out of town. He spilled cherry Coke on my oriental rug.
Ooh.
And then just pulled the ottoman over it. I saw it 4 days after he left. So it was easy hundo for 4 days of hanging at my house, eating my food, and watching my big-screen TV. Bye-bye. 309, sorry. But I don't want to stay at Sandberg's house. I want to hear the guest side of the story. Well, maybe you're not invited, 309.
Excuse me. I don't care what the circumstances are. There's pen on my white couch.
See why we're afraid of her, Dean?
Step back now. Step back.
Don't look her directly in the eye.
Why don't you just buy her a new couch?
Well, how am I involved in this?
There you go.
Well, I don't understand why I'm buying
you're
her a
couch. Wealthy.
Hey, I'm not very. 224, when I was a kid, I used to do a lot of dumb things. Whenever my grandparents used to visit me, would say I was so well-behaved. Well, maybe not so much. I did everything from lock my grandfather into a chicken coop on a hot summer day to
what?
A number of other things. Who hasn't locked their grandfather in a chicken coop?
Of course, right?
Dean 815, first day with stainless steel dishwasher, my dog jumped up to greet me. Her nails needed to be cut.
Scratched it.
She scratched down the front of the dishwasher.
Oh.
And then here's the weird part. She took a pen and wrote on this woman's white couch.
The dog?
Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with people are saying Mary should stay single. I mean, I like my house clean, too. When kids come over and they put their hands on the wall, I don't get that.
Oh.
Why do you have to touch the walls?
That's, you know, we have some French doors and the glass panes and the three-year-old, her little handprints are at, you know, 3 feet high.
You two just need to move in. You both need to move into a museum.
Our kids are really clean. I don't know.
708. Take ink out of the couch, spray hairspray heavy on the spot, and blot it with a clean cloth.
Don't wipe, blot.
And then rotate the cloth as you blot.
All right. The hairspray, I knew that from high school.
I
mentioned that earlier.
You can also use...
And plus, your couch will look great when you take it out that way.
You can also use rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, we tried vinegar. It didn't work.
Same thing.
Okay.
Red wine vinegar?
No.
How do you get the vinegar smell out of the couch?
Well, that Stanley steamer's coming today. I mean, it's a whole...
Yeah, I think that's
hope
the
that Stanley guy's good.
But they say hairspray or rubbing alcohol. Dab, dab, dab. But
somebody also said to get some goof off. But it's a white couch. If I was dealing with like a...
You thought about duct tape? Just put it right over the spot? 312, Mom got a large dried floral arrangement as a gift. Dad left his cigarette lighter lying around. Guess what I did?
Oh.
331. It's just a couch. Be thankful the three-year-old didn't find a bottle of aspirin lying around the house.
Oh, you know what? I'm not all that concerned about their lives. They
step back now.
You know, years from now, this will seem adorable. When I was little, I carved my brother's name into a beautiful china cabinet that my mother had.
Oh, I bet she thought that was sweet.
Because I wanted to get my brother in trouble, so I carved his name into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's you can actually still see it today. She never did anything about it. And it's adorable. Are you funny now?
No.
Now.
It's a great Thanksgiving story.
It's funny because I had a nightmare on Saturday night, I woke up and I was telling Pat that I had these things of like 10 years from now when Kennedy's at our house and she's 13 and we're looking at the arm of the sofa. I'm like, oh, remember when you wrote it here and all your ink is still here? And it's not cute or funny or anything.
Well, let's be honest. You're not going to have the couch in 13 years.
That's probably.
It's 8:18. It's time now for traffic.
And won't be friends with them anymore then.
No, I mean, it's not like you're going to talk to them again. You know, once you're married to him, you're going to cut his family off. I mean, they're clearly the problem. You know what we're talking about, buddy? We're talking about the great Pat Boyle from Comcast Sportsnet.
Oh.
Yeah. You thought it was someone else. No, it's famous Pat Boyle.
I did not know that.
Chaka Khan, Joe Perry, and the other stuff we talked about, and Snoop Dogg on Jeopardy. What?
Have a Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh.
8:22, we continue. Show number 688, Dean, if you were wondering what show this is.
Seems like 687 to me.
Felt a little 687-ish. Dean Richards is here. Chaka Khan's in rehab. What happened? Let me tell you a quick story.
Yes.
So this is probably 1991, 2, 3, something like that. And I was at Paisley Park. It was an after party with Prince and a bunch of people. And Chaka Khan was so drunk that people were literally carrying her around to different spots. Like, you know, you'd set her in a chair, and then the party would move into this performance studio, and then you'd have to pick her up. And she's not a big woman. You'd pick her up, and you'd carry her and set her in another chair. So she was like, what's a Weekend at Bernie's?
Yeah.
Weekend at Chaka's. So, and that was 20-plus years ago. But this is the painkiller thing that killed Prince, right?
This is, that's why she and her sister, who is apparently also addicted, both of them checked themselves, voluntarily entered a rehab treatment program. She said that she was motivated to do it because of what happened to Prince. Same prescription drugs she is taking, and
her sister too, huh?
Realized that she had a problem. It didn't say what her sister was taking. I don't know if it was the same thing, but the statement from Chaka Khan's representative said that the sister also was battling addiction. So they are in a treatment program. They've canceled. Chaka Khan has canceled all of her appearances for the month of July. They're saying that she could be back recording, could be back on the road early August.
Well, we wish her well.
We do. You know, it's that's a tough thing to admit you have a problem and to do something about it. Very difficult first step, but good for her for doing it.
I think so as well. And as you know, Andrea, this is how I got off of the Flintstone vitamins.
You had a long haul,
run. You got to admit you have
you
a problem.
Did well.
Joe Perry from Aerosmith collapsed last night.
He was doing a concert. You know, he's touring with Alice Cooper and Johnny Depp in this band that's called the Hollywood Vampires.
Never heard of them. Are they good?
They were. They appeared at the Grammy Awards. I think it was the Grammy Awards.
They're good.
They did an appearance. You know, if you like
good compared to what?
Hard rock. There.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I mean, is it like a cover band or what do they play?
No, it's it's
All
like
Air Supply,
heavy metal.
You Very metal?
It's not none of those things that you've said. None of those words that have come out of your mouth. Or
nothing I've said is true?
Not one word that you've said is
remotely that different than any other
accurate.
Day?
Heavy metal. They're a heavy metal band. And they were performing at Coney Island last night. And Joe Perry collapsed. Took him to a nearby hospital. His people are saying that he's in stable condition now, that he's under the best of care, that he's doing okay. So that's all that
What's wrong
we
with
know
him, Uncle
moment.
Bean?
It's going to be okay, little Stevie. These guys were at Aurora's River Edge Park just this past Thursday. They performed here in the Chicago area. So again,
well, he's 65 years old. He took a lot of drugs in the 70s, but then they got healthy, right? The band got healthy.
As far as I know. I don't know about their drug use. I've never really heard about a rock and roll band using any sort of stimulation in any way.
Steven Tyler and Joe Perry at one point were called the Toxic Twins back in the 70s because the two of them between the drugs and the alcohol.
Well, they're both in their mid 60s. Remember when Steven Tyler was here?
Yeah.
Steven Tyler looks like your grandmother. I mean, you know, he's got the long hair and he wears, you know, the closest thing you get to women's
clothes. House coat?
See, I sort of disagree. There's something sexy
about
Stevie.
Stevie Nicks
Tyler.
And Steven Tyler, they share the same wardrobe. Flowing robes.
They both wear a lot of scarves.
Yeah, I love Aerosmith and I love Steven Tyler, but and Joe Perry's 65 and he's got the, you know, the long wavy hair. And obviously, I'm bitter, but he's got the long wavy hair and stuff.
And the chiseled cheekbones.
Well,
and
let's not go crazy. Chiseled, you know.
Great body.
Ectomorphic.
Is that a word?
Yeah, look it up. Joe Perry, maybe a couple of six packs of Ensure next time the concert happens, huh? No?
My lawyers tell me that I've said enough on this whole case.
Back to Dean now for the Snoop Dogg story.
This Family Feud story that I'm intimately familiar with. So Snoop Dogg goes on Celebrity Family Feud.
You want to hear it?
Exactly where you'd expect him to be. And they ask him an obvious question. He's up against Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right.
You know, vying for which team is going to play the game. And this is what it sounded like.
Here we go. We got the top six answers on the board. Name something Grandma might do if she caught Grandpa smoking marijuana. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Harvey's walking off.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's shocked that Snoop Dogg moved that fast.
All them fast hands you got.
Right. There you go.
Marijuana, bam! Just like that. I named something Grandma might do. She called Grandpa smoking marijuana.
Put hands on him.
Put hands on him.
Put hands on him? What the hell is happening?
Slap him around.
More specific?
Yeah, more specific.
She would hit him.
Put hands on him.
Came up number four.
Fourth answer was beat his old ass.
Scream at him. Let's play, right? Let's go.
All right, hang with us now, kids. The payoff's coming. That didn't even give us the payoff. The payoff was Snoop eventually blows the question. We obviously didn't have time to screen the audio.
Was join him?
No, there
in
was
there
a
in any of the answers?
Let's go live to Andy Mazur, who's a drug addict. Andy?
You mean they had a chance to steal, and they couldn't steal.
And the reason is? Because the top the things that are rolled or something.
Yeah, that was on the $100,000 pyramid.
Yes, wrong show.
The same night.
You know that
they were trying to give
you know
a clue.
That Dick Clark has passed away, right, Steve?
Well, yeah, they were trying to give him a clue that said things that are rolled.
And he got that question wrong.
And he couldn't get that one.
So,
right.
Steve, my point is that Snoop Dogg, the drug addict, got the wrong answer on a completely different show, but I wanted to play that clip from Steve Harvey in Celebrity Family Feud. I don't know why you're not following that.
You know what the number one answer is that's rolling right now is Dick Clark in his grave.
Yeah, that's true.
Literally.
You can hear the whir.
Things that are rolling. Dick Clark.
Are you glad you came back from L.A. for this segment?
I'm seeing how I'm booking my flight to see how quickly I can get back.
Lin-Manuel Miranda did his final Hamilton.
This was the final Hamilton. He, you know, he's done that same role. What show did you
Alexander
What
Hamilton.
Show did you say this is today? 600 what?
88.
He has performed starring in Hamilton for 19 months.
Yeah. How many shows is that?
Same. Well, you know, it's
eight a week.
Eight a week.
Yeah.
Times, you know, do the math, somebody, because I'm.
Okay,
it's 152.
I'm not gonna. My point is, he's been doing it for a long time. Saturday was his final performance, and it was a star-studded audience. Senator John Kerry was there. J-Lo was there. I'm trying to find out if they were sitting next to each other, because that would be the most fantastic, you know, small talk conversation.
Most of the State Department advice comes through J-Lo. A lot of people don't know that.
Who else was there? Spike Lee. Rosie O'Donnell was there. Charlie Rose was there. Jane Fonda. All the celebs were there and paid anywhere between $2,000 and $5,000 for a ticket. But some tickets were going on eBay and, you know, some of the broker sites for $20,000. $20,000 to see the final performance, which went off without a hitch. Huge standing ovation for Lin-Manuel Miranda.
There's a sucker born every minute, every minute, every minute. It's a new song from Hamilton.
He took the standing ovation. He goes outside and greets the fans who are all waiting outside, which I thought was very nice. And then after the show, he cut his hair real short.
Try to be more like you and me?
Because he had, he had the Hamilton hair, the long Hamilton hair. So like anybody would, he cut his hair and then put a picture of his cut hair on Twitter.
Well, it's historically significant because most people, I don't know if most people realize this or not, but when the founding fathers lived, the reason you didn't cut your hair very often is because the line at Supercuts was huge.
Yep.
Yeah, and they all posted their hair locks on Twitter as well.
Snapchat mostly.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly Snapchat. It
took a long time because electricity hadn't been invented yet.
Right.
So the beautician, if you know, whatever they called him back then, was standing there with an electric clipper in his hand, but it's like, where do I plug this in? Electricity has not been invented yet.
I don't care how long this segment takes. We're going to keep going until we hit one that works.
Well, I hope you got a whole lot of time.
You can see Deed's interview with Melissa McCarthy, the star of Ghostbusters, all morning long on Channel 9. But give us your review right now, please.
Dean's List B. I liked it. It's extremely reverent to the original. It's very entertaining. It's very funny. I liked the camaraderie and the chemistry between the stars, Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. A scene stealer in this movie, hilarious, is Chris Hemsworth. He plays the ditzy beefcake secretary. And, Steve, you know a little about that.
I did most of Chris Hemsworth's stunt work.
Yeah, when you're brought into an office, you know, strictly for your looks.
It's mostly my abs and my ass. Those are the two things I get called in.
Right, right. Which is what some people call this segment also, but the abs and the ass.
How'd you guys find out that's what we call it behind your backs?
Well, we heard.
But it's
but it's good. We should see it.
You should see it. There are a couple of little problems. The script could have been tightened up a little bit, but it's perfectly entertaining. And we've interviewed the whole cast. We're going to share that next Sunday morning.
By the way, if anybody wants the clip that I played out of context from Celebrity Family Feud, I'll be sending that out to listeners after the show's over.
Just email absandass.com.
That's an act that's never going to get in the Radio Hall of Fame.
That's abs, the letter N.
Hey, it's a good thing I signed a new deal last week. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye. This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We're live to Bennett, the show millennial. Bennett, can you explain Pokemon Go to me?
Yes.
I mean, I'd like to be able to get online and not see another Pokemon Go story, but every story is now a Pokemon Go story.
Yeah.
So. All right. So Pokemon was the kids' toy thing that Ross was into in the 90s.
Yes.
All right. What's Pokemon Go?
So Pokemon Go, think of Pokemon where you're out trying to catch them all, which is the catchphrase of Pokemon, these little monsters, and it's via
Pokemon is Pokemonsters?
Pokemon, yeah, shortening of Pokemonsters.
Okay.
And
probably should have paid more attention when I was playing with Ross with the Pokemon stuff.
This is a game.
When I pretended I was doing the Pokemon thing.
This is a game we're talking about,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So this idea of trying to catch all these Pokemon, you do it via your phone, via virtual reality. So with geolocation, this app allows you to
run
around.
Is it geocache?
I don't know. Geolocation.
What's the difference between geocache and geolocation?
I don't know.
I thought geocache was a game using your location.
That very well could be the case.
Do you know anything about technology?
No, I'm the millennial.
Okay.
I'm just supposed to act like I know, remember?
All right, so I have my Pokemon, I have my regular phone.
Right.
I've downloaded the Pokemon app.
Good.
No,
this is hypothetical.
I actually haven't.
I know.
The Pokemon Go app. Now what happens?
So then you start walking around.
Okay.
Wherever you are, trying to find these Pokemon. And so let's say right outside the studio here, there could be a Pokemon. So then you go up to that spot that it shows on your phone, then actually in real life, and you play it virtually of trying to catch.
Well, am I going
to
see something, or do I have to be on some form of pharmaceuticals?
On your phone. That might help.
Right.
But on your phone, it'll show up as a little Pokemon that you're trying to catch.
But is that a real thing?
And who plants the virtual Pokemons? Is this all embedded in the app?
It's all embedded in the app.
Okay, so over the weekend, supposedly in the search for the Pokemon, somebody found a dead body.
That is correct.
And there are various other encounters that people have had, and there were several car accidents because people were playing Pokemon Go while they were driving.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done this yet?
No. I, believe it or not, I was never into Pokemon. One of, like, the only people probably my age that never got into it, so.
What were you into as a kid?
You know, I...
Not that you're that mature now, but, I mean, when you were younger.
I didn't get out much.
Well, what'd you do when you were inside?
I would just kind of play around with, you know, just... We had a very simple household. We didn't have many electronics or, like, video games growing up.
Right.
So...
Do you have electricity?
Only on Wednesdays.
Okay. Indoor plumbing?
Yeah, we had indoor plumbing.
Okay.
But it was a very simple childhood, you know? Just kind of
basic somebody
stuff.
Gave you a rock and you were happy for hours, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty good.
So it's called Pokemon Go. You haven't heard of this?
I'm really confused by this. I mean, they like to think I'm... up to date on...
Oh, no, you're not up to date.
But I feel...
We're not up to date. So you download the Pokemon Go app.
Pokemon Go.
Okay, and then you start the game, and you walk outside, and I believe your location situation has to be turned on, because that's how the hackers and the terrorists get your phone.
Right.
And then as you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you may or may not find a Pokemonster.
But it's all virtual. It's all fake. There's not like a real Pokemon person there waiting for you.
Are there clues? What comes up? Let me go live to the WGN newsroom covering the story extensively with team coverage. Ryan Burrow, what do you know?
Yeah, I'm doing this story actually for ABC today. It's called augmented reality, not virtual reality, because it incorporates real-life surroundings with this game.
Okay.
So essentially, your eyes are on the screen the whole time, and that's what's causing some of the problems, because people are walking out into traffic. People are trying to do this while they're skateboarding. Lots of bumps and bruises. And in O'Fallon, Missouri, it's interesting because cops are just learning about this right now. They said that a bunch of people were robbed near a gas station. They had no idea why all these people were going and hanging out by this gas station. Turns out these pretty smart robbers, at least from the outside,
hilarious.
Started ambushing them because they knew that these people were going to this secluded area and they were robbing them.
What a time saver for the criminal industry. All right, so I don't understand what shows up on my screen. Have you played this?
I have not played it, no. But essentially, as you walk, you know, you're walking on the beach, you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you're walking in your own neighborhood, these little creatures pop up, or these Pokeballs, which everyone's trying to
get. By the way, if you have Pokeballs, get to a clinic. I mean, problems. Soon get to a clinic, yeah.
And you're capturing them, and you're scoring points, and you're doing battle. But obviously, the problem is your eyes are glued to the screen. But... on the upside, it's a video game where you're actually getting out and enjoying the fresh air, right?
So you're walking.
You're walking, got you're it. Biking, you're doing stuff. Yeah, if you've got to go from location to location, you might have to jump on your bike or your skateboard or whatever.
Is there any skill involved, or I just walk around until my phone finds one of these guys?
I think the skill involved is the energy you put into it.
Sounds incredibly stupid. I don't know what I'm missing.
I think it sounds really dumb, too. I don't get this. What do you get once you capture the Pokemon balls?
You're scoring points. You're getting value.
And you get to turn it in for
characters.
Prizes.
It's not like Chuck E. Cheese. You don't get a you know you don't get one of those,
they get
those
tickets.
You don't get a kazoo.
Yeah. Some off the top shelf.
What do they call them? Chinese finger traps, right? Where you can't pull your fingers out.
Right, a kazoo and a firecracker.
This makes me miss my Mattel Electronics football.
Exactly. As the guys run into each other. All right, you doing the story for ABC News, you said?
I am, yeah. Look, okay. this alone, which it rolled out July 6th, already made Nintendo $9 billion.
Oh, this is cool. You can pick what you want to look like. You can pick like
Here's the thing.
I'm on it.
And this is a worldwide phenomenon? This is not just here? Ryan's not covering the story.
That is correct.
I'm sorry. We're
this is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just here.
No, Australia, New Zealand, and they're rolling it out in Japan.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing we don't get taken over. You know, within 10 minutes.
Right, but you can pick. You could pick if you want like long hair, if you want to wear a baseball cap.
Well, it's got to be fashion.
Tight
with you.
Pants.
For all the people who think this is stupid, just. If you're driving, watch out, because there are going to be people who might be walking in front of the road not paying attention because of this.
You can accessorize. Look at this.
Yeah, I'm excited like you are.
We created a monster.
I want to be the very best like no one ever was.
Granted, I don't have time to do the show right now. I'm wandering around outside with my Pokemon Go app. Joining us now on the phone is someone named Moose. Good morning, Moose.
Good morning.
All right, Moose, are you playing Pokemon Go right now?
I was just a few minutes ago. I'm driving right now. I'm a responsible driver and not playing Pokemon Go right now.
Have you played Pokemon Go while you've been driving?
Not at the moment. I'm not going to lie. I have checked it a few times at a few stoplights.
What do you do for a living, Moose?
I work loss prevention.
Loss prevention. What does that mean? You're in charge of making sure people don't steal stuff?
Yeah, at a warehouse, yes.
Okay. And you married? Do you have a girlfriend?
Nope, fiance.
Oh, your fiance. What's your fiance think of your Pokemon Go habit?
She's actually been great with it. She's been assisting me. She's my co-pilot. When we're driving, she catches the Pokemon for me.
How old are you, dude?
I am 24.
Well, I appreciate you listening. I'm going to give you Blackhawks convention tickets. You can't get these anywhere. You can't buy these.
God, that'd be awesome. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan.
You going to take one of your Pokemonsters?
No, I'm going to take my Pokemonsters and probably my fiance because she wouldn't be very happy if I didn't take her.
Yeah, you better take her. It's the 9th annual Blackhawks convention this weekend at the Hilton Chicago Hotel. We'll all be there July 15th through the 17th, and Moose is going. Why do people call you Moose?
Moose? Oh, my full name is Mustafa. And Moose is a quick nickname for me.
Mustafa, is that Greek?
Nope, it's Pakistani.
All right, so Mustafa, Moose, as I prefer to call you, how much time per day on the weekend, like Saturday and Sunday, the weekend just passed, did you spend playing Pokemon Go?
Let's say we were up in Wisconsin this past weekend, and at about, you know, it came out on Friday for us, so that's when we started playing. So we drove up Friday to Wisconsin, and we, at around 11:30 at night, we saw a Pokemon. On the app, you can track Pokemon that are nearby, and we had a rare Pokemon pop up. And about 11:30 at night, we were walking through the streets of Wisconsin trying to find a certain Pokemon. And I think we were out there for about an hour and a half trying to find the one Pokemon.
Now listen, Moose. The Wisconsin Pokemonsters, do they have higher cholesterol? You know, they're getting a lot of cheese up there.
Well, I got a little bit more higher cholesterol from all that cheese, that's for sure.
Does this feel like something you're going to be bored with soon, or is this going to be around for a while?
You know what? The main thing about it is it brings a lot of people together, which is crazy. Yesterday, we went to a nearby area that had a lot of Pokestops. Basically, when you go around the state, there's a bunch of Pokestops all around the state. And you go to these places, and it's a congregation of a lot of people. There was probably like 40 to 50 people all walking around with their phones trying to catch Pokemon in a nearby area.
Yeah, and how do you know there's other people there when your face is buried in your phone? You just run into each other?
There's like items you can set out that help bring Pokemon to a certain area. So you could everyone congregates in a small area that could catch Pokemon at.
And again, is there any skill involved, or when you walk to the right area, your phone finds it?
That's basically all there is to it.
I love that your fiance plays this with you, dude, because your chance of finding another woman is slim.
I definitely know that one. Sure.
I'd love an aerial view of this, wouldn't you, to see everybody just kind of running in circles, trying to...
That's great. You know what else I'm going to give Moose? I'm going to give Moose a MyPillow because he's going to need some sleep after a long day of chasing Pokemonsters.
Yeah, maybe one for my legs, too.
MyPillow. Visit MyPillow.com. Thanks for calling, dude. I appreciate you listening. Hold on. That's my favorite Moose.
There's a lot of Moose out there. That's your favorite?
I probably should let you guys ask questions. Anybody have questions about Pokemon Go?
Yes, why?
Yeah, I think that's the key question.
Does it involve food?
Steve, what were you going to say before?
No, I was just going to say we have team coverage. I was on the phone with the Pokemon people. It does not involve food. I know that now.
Oh, there's no food involved.
No food involved, so I will not be playing the app.
If there was a Pokemon Go version where you would find appetizers, would that be the greatest day of your life?
It could be, yeah. If I were chasing a Pokemon that actually had, like, in Wisconsin, cheese balls or something, I could go after them and get a cheese ball. That would be nice.
It'd be like Pokemon Eats.
Yeah.
Whenever Steve would show up at the right location, somebody would whip a cheese ball into his mouth.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
remember playing this as a disc jockey when it was brand new. Ray Parker Jr.
Something strange in the neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
There's something weird and it don't look good. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
It's 9:10. I bet I haven't talked to Ray Parker Jr. in 25 years.
That long?
Yeah, apparently we must have been fighting. Welcome back to the show, Ray Parker Jr. Good morning.
Good morning. I love that song you're playing.
Yeah, I bet you do. Have you heard it before?
I heard that somewhere before.
Once or twice. Ray Parker Jr. Remember radio?
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I know you remember. You were in the band. talking to them.
Hey, it's not a lot I remember nowadays, okay? Don't test my memory out.
And I guess I didn't know this. You played with Barry White.
Well, I played on all his records, yeah. Barry White was a good friend. In fact, believe it or not, it was connected to Barry White that I got to write the theme for Ghostbusters, because the guy who did the publishing for Barry White ended up being the vice president of Columbia Pictures, and I ended up having hit records of my own, and we connected years later, and he said, you're the guy for the job. Let's get this going.
So were you producing and doing studio stuff, or were you in the Love Unlimited Orchestra?
I was in the Love Unlimited Orchestra, but I also wrote some songs for Barry White. He was kind enough to... at an early age to let me write with him. And one, we sold like 6 million records.
But people have no idea how big Barry White was. And I don't mean big. He was big. But I mean big. Big. He's a huge star.
I mean big.
Huge star.
We co-wrote a song together called You See the Trouble With Me. It wasn't as big a hit in America, but it was a big hit worldwide. We sold 6 million records. It's on all his greatest hits out. You know,
what's it called? You See the Trouble in Me? How do I not know this? See if you can find that, Bennett. See if you can find me. You See the Trouble in Me.
Yeah. It's called You See the Trouble. It's on any one of his greatest hits albums, because internationally it went number one all over the world. And then a group remade it in the early 2000s and went number one all over the world again.
Well, I was a disc jockey for a long time, so I played every record Ray Parker Jr. ever made, including some that he didn't even know he made. And,
thank you.
And I remember he used to come through town wherever I was being thrown out of, whatever city I was being thrown out of at that point. But you're
yeah, right.
You were always great to radio and always great to us, and it's just nice to reconnect with you. Congrats on all the success.
Well, thank you. I'm having a great time, so I'm always having a good time and having fun, and that's what makes the music special to me so much.
All right, well, it's nice that the music is still special, but let me ask you a question that's important. Does the mailbox still make money every time Ghostbusters plays? Do you go out and there's more checks sitting there? Yeah, buddy.
In fact, neither does it steal. It's never stopped making money.
How about that?
It's just an incredible song.
I love him. I remember talking to Billy Joel about Just the Way You Are. And I said, you ever get tired of playing it? And he goes, well, there's nights I could do without having it in the set, but then I go home and the mailbox has a little something extra for me.
But yeah, that's right. They get new appreciation for it.
Yeah, pays
them. By the way, that's my favorite song by him.
Yeah, it's a great song. And Springsteen said at one point he was going to write a song called Keeping the Lights On, and it was just because the mailbox kept making money. You kids, publishing.
Yes.
Three words.
Yes.
Publishing. Yes. Own the publishing.
Yes.
All right, Ben, did you find that record? All right, give me a little bit of it.
I'm like a blind man who lost his way. I can't see nothing. I'm like a deaf man who can't hear. Yeah, I can't hear nothing. See the trouble with.
I like this. How did I not know this? So this got nowhere here? Is this why I don't know this record?
I have no idea. But it was number one overseas. Huge record.
All right. So what was Barry White like in the studio? Was he good to work with?
He's a wonderful guy to work with. You know, he's a real kind of rough guy because he's got that big voice. And when he yells at you, even if he doesn't mean no harm, it just shakes the whole room. Right? But, you know, it's an interesting thing about him. As thuggish as he would like to say he was at the time, and he grew up in the, you know, Texas and Southeast L.A. and all that kind of stuff, he saw me as a young kid trying to make it, and I was over-exuberant, to say the least. And he was very kind to me and extended some opportunities to me that I don't think he extended to anybody. So to me, he's a very kind and generous person.
Yeah, I never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I was would love lay down, baby, lay down. I love that music.
That's right.
Love that music.
People would say, well, you know, Barry White's pretty large guy. I mean, at 20 years old, I thought I was cute as I could be. I had the six pack. I mean, I had it ripped up. But if Barry White came in, he would take your girl.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, he'd take your. He'd say hello, and all of a sudden the girl would be loose. Your hand would drop out of hers, and you see her going somewhere else.
No, that voice, that music, come on. You had no shot. Yeah. No shot.
Yeah, no shot at it. I mean, it was just terrible.
What do you think of a new Ghostbusters movie coming out?
Well, a new Ghostbusters movie, I actually saw it a couple of days ago, and it's really, really good. I think everybody's going to have to be a pleasant surprise. And no, they didn't pay me to say that, by the way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
me and my kids and my wife, we went in because we read Rotten Tomatoes and all the rest of the stuff that the rest of you guys read. I was scared to go to the premiere. I was just scared to death. You know, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what's going to happen because, you know, they didn't call me to do any of the music or anything. So I had nothing to do with this film except licensing the old song and then to put who you're going to call on the poster. So we went there with just a clean slate. And I have to tell you, it's very, very entertaining. It's very, very good. Now, is it like the old movie? It's no. It's apples and oranges. They're just two different things. You know, so I wouldn't compare one to the other. But I will say this. If you go see the new film, you're going to have a really good time.
Ray, it also opens it up to a whole new set of fans, too. I think this is really cool. My 5-year-old cousin wanted to be a Ghostbuster for Halloween 2 years ago, and he was going, Ghostbusters. So how cool is that to see the little kids still singing Ghostbusters?
Well, it's like you guys it's like you guys that grew up in the 80s where you go, did you know Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings?
Right.
Little kids, though.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Ben, did you have the new Ghostbusters theme? This can't be as good as the original. Let me hear a little bit of that. It's Fall Out Boy, right? Isn't Fall Out Boy Chicago?
Yeah.
Chicago band.
Chicago Boys.
Yeah, Chicago Boys. It's all right. It's not Ray Parker Jr. It's all right. It's got a little something to it. I don't know, Ray, what do you think?
Well, first of all, it's hard for me to decide because I'm honored when somebody like that does my song.
Sure.
I mean, it's the biggest compliment in the world when somebody else does your song.
Right.
And when I was in the movie theater listening to it, there were like 7 versions of my song.
That's
it was
cool.
Everywhere. Dan Aykroyd was saying, I ain't afraid no ghost. Melissa McCarthy was saying, who you gonna call? And then there were all the other artists in the film with new name bands, probably I don't know anything about because I'm too old now. Excuse me, I'm old school. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's such a what a compliment and such an honor. And I'm sure all of these younger groups, they really tried hard and did really, really well.
Yeah, without a doubt. Andy, you were a disc jockey. Say hi to Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, Ray.
And don't forget, there's a certain thing called publishing and royalties. I mean, I'm hoping one of these things.
Hello, mailbox.
No one's praying that they hit more than me. No one's praying they hit more than me.
Go out to the mail and get Daddy some more money. Andrew, say hi.
Me about Fall Out Boy, tell me I'll come on the stage with him. Let's get going here already. Tell Fall Out Boy from Chicago, who you going to call? Call me, I'll come play with you. Let's
get going. Hey, Ray, I was curious, the video for the first song back in 84, how fun was that to make?
Yeah. Oh, that was a lot of fun because we didn't know what we were doing. We just were making it funny. I said, call the Saturday Night Live crowd. And the director, when he passed that, he got everybody from there and everybody beyond. And it just became a fun thing. And the idea that these guys, he wanted to block off Times Square in the middle of Friday afternoon. That's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Well, the cool
thing. We had Bill Murray breakdancing, and he couldn't spin around, so I had to grab his leg and finish turning around because he couldn't get the speed going, you know. And it was just the whole thing was just funny. We didn't really try that hard making that video, but it was just funny because it just was, you know, just one of those things. And the stars aligned in the sky, and it just was.
Well, the cool thing about the videos in the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years of MTV was that was before things got artsy.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the worst thing that you could do is make a video that actually had something to do with the song. You know, the videos had something to do with the song. You saw concert footage or you just saw people having a good time like your video. And I love those early days of MTV. You know, there's a book out now with all the original VJs. talking about their experience at MTV. Ray, I don't even know if you know this. You know, Martha Quinn made $32,000 when she was a VJ. $32,000
a
year.
That's it? Wow.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
You should just some of the, don't forget the guys that NSYNC only made $35,000, and they were the stars of
yeah.
the band.
How about that? It's crazy.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake was making $35,000.
Kids, three words: publishing. Ray Parker Jr., nice to have you back on the Steve Cochran Show. You do social media or any of that?
I do all the social media. I even got what you call verified on Twitter. I mean,
hey, hands
you know,
up. Hands
up. Yeah. Out with this stuff.
All right, so where do we follow you? What's
some hashtags in front of it, and all of a sudden it goes everywhere.
Where's the follow? What, just Ray Parker Jr., at Ray Parker Jr.?
Well, at O'Reo is mine. Or hashtag Ray Parker Jr., or Facebook Ray Parker Jr., or RayParkerJr.com. But you put my name in, you get me anywhere you go. You'll find me.
All right, cool. Thanks, buddy. Nice talking to you again. Congrats on all the success, and I hope the movie kills, because I just want you making money. I don't care about anybody else.
Well, thank you so much. You sound like my daddy.
See you later. Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr., the best-looking man in that video, and the best dressed, too. He had the gray Reebok kicks. Oh, remember yeah. those high tops?
Yeah,
they were
good-looking.
So many stars in that. I mean, I was just watching the video. Danny DeVito. Al Franken was in.
Remember that they did those one shots, right? Yeah. Where they just went around with the camera and they got everybody to say, who are you going to call?
That was great.
Yeah. Carly Simon.
Is that who that is?
Yeah, Carly Simon. Yeah. Terry Garr.
Yeah, anybody that was a star in the day.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
925, that was former club DJ Bill Curtis. It's 926. So many stories, so little time. How about a new airline fee? You guys want a new airline fee?
No.
The nickel and diming of the airlines. Aren't you traveling again sometime soon? You haven't traveled in a while.
Yeah, I'm going to the conventions. I'll be flying to the convention in Cleveland next week and Philadelphia the following week.
That's right. Back-to-back weeks. Yeah. Cleveland next week, Philly the following week.
So what's the new
fee? I'm starting to regret that I said let's not do the show there.
I wish you were going to. We could still get you there. Come on.
Yeah, but at this point, I'd have to stay in Youngstown, which may be safer.
We'll find a. Yeah, I was going to say, we'll find a place for you to stay.
The deal next week on the convention is that the Trumpster is allegedly going to announce his VP next weekend, right before the convention, and possibly on Chuck Show with Todd. Chuck Todd. No, I don't know if that's going to happen that way, because Trump probably will forget that he told somebody that and they leaked it.
I still think we need to do our predictions for who Trump and Hillary are going to pick. Like, you know, we pretty much bet on everything else, all the golf tournaments.
We'll have our British Open picks on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I think in Trump's case, you got to find somebody that will take it. And in Hillary's case, you got to find somebody that will take it from her. Because you're going to be in a backseat.
Yeah.
You could have had a House of Cards scenario.
Sure you could have. She could pick Bill.
Yeah. Well, constitutionally, you'd have an issue because he couldn't be in line to the presidency because he's already served two terms.
Right.
So, but I'm going with Annie Mazur. I think Trump and Mazur.
I was going to think Tom Brady.
That would make America great again.
By the way, I fell asleep watching TV. Yeah. By the way, how many times have I said by the way today? So I fell asleep watching TV and Ted 2 was on.
I haven't seen that yet.
I've seen it several times. And one of the core plot points, and yes, I said plot points in Ted.
Nice.
One of the core plot points was Tom Brady and the theft of something very important to Tom Brady.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, so
watch
go ahead.
Now.
You can just say it. I'm not going to see it.
It's not a spoiler alert. There's nothing I could discuss on the air.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
It's not a movie you want to take grandma to.
Oh, no, I want to know.
So, all right. So, nickel and diming by the airlines. Haven't had enough yet? How about the airlines charging you for sitting next to your own kids?
Are you kidding me?
Time Magazine reports British Airways, American Airlines, and others may have just instituted a new baggage fee. Thought it was impossible for baggage fees to get any more gougy? Well, imagine that those airlines will now charge you not one check bag fee, but an extra check bag fee if you're connecting to another flight.
See, this is why I like Southwest.
So in other words, every time you are on the plane, so you're going from one airline to another.
You mean one city
to the next. It's a continuation of the flight.
Yeah, one city to the next.
Right, but even as an airline to another airline, you'd only pay the stupid baggage fee once. Now they're saying every time the bag switches to another plane, you know, you're transferring planes, you go on an American flight to wherever, and then you're transferring to another American plane, your bag would transfer and get there. No, not anymore. Now you're going to pay twice.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
And it's not like you can avoid that because most of these airlines don't fly direct to certain places.
Yeah, and they always bruise the luggage anyway.
Well, do you remember the slogan that our friend Peter Greenberg came up with? I think it's the best slogan I've ever heard for airlines. We're not happy until you're not happy.
Yeah, it's true.
Dwayne Wade may have to reopen his divorce settlement because of his fat new contract with the Bulls. Dwayne Wade's wife says, hey, I want to look at that again.
She said it just like that.
Yeah. Roger Ailes, the boss at Fox News, has been fairly quiet over the weekend, but his attorneys have been talking. And six other women have come forward and said that Roger Ailes was he was a hands-on kind of manager.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Including a really awful story of a 16-year-old girl at the time who was locked in an office with him as he chased her around and showed her his junk.
And you don't mean his junk mail?
No. Derek Jeter got married over the weekend to a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. Is it Hannah Davis? Is that her name?
That's her name, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he the one who would hand out the goodie baskets after you slept with
him? He swears that's not true.
Okay.
It's a great story, though.
Yeah. He had to deal with all the bars, though, in New York, that if they blabbed to any of the tabloids that he was in their bar or seen doing anything, that he would never go to that bar again and tell everybody in New York not to go to that bar.
It's amazing that he lived in New York and was one of the premier athletes in the country, if not the world, and stayed out of trouble the way he did. But the rumor you were referring to was a goodie bag he would give to any woman he slept with after he called her a car to take her home in the morning. And in the goodie bag was a Derek Jeter autographed baseball.
Right. Signed memorabilia.
El Chapo's not getting enough sleep in prison. His lawyer says they keep the lights on all night, and it's cruel and unusual. Sort of like when he used to have people chop the heads off of his enemies. I just can't imagine enough bad things that could happen to El Chapo. And in health news, your coffee might make you deaf.
Huh?
What? Literally, huh?
Yeah. Drinking too much coffee, too much caffeine could actually hurt your hearing. So, Andy, see if you can polish off that 32-ouncer from Dunkin' Donuts. This is from the same people who 2 weeks ago told you coffee was good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is why Orion hates studies.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
It doesn't seem to me like it's enough.
On Chicago's very own 720.
It's just not enough.
WGN.
It's just not enough.
Oh, big, fat, funky man. Barry White. He ruled the 70s.
My darling, can't get enough of your love, babe.
By the way, if you'd like to come to my Steve Cochran Talk It Up and Hit the Post summer camp, please register online.
It's pretty impressive. Go get a Postmaster General.
That's exactly right. He continued to be the most useless skill ever known to man, the ability to talk up a record. It's 9:45 in the morning. I have to talk to my sister. Apparently, my nieces, Nina and Claire, were playing Pokemon Go all weekend.
No.
I got an idea. What if we develop an app called Middle Age Mon? And it's Middle Age Mon Stay, where you just sit in your favorite chair in a house, and it's an app where stuff is brought to you.
I like that.
I do, too. I think it's fantastic.
A study. You know how Orion loves the studies. A study's out of 9 ways science says you're making yourself less attractive.
Oh.
Now, you know, normally these are sex-specific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 9 things women don't like about men, 9 things men don't like about women. This is judged based on massive samples.
Mm.
Not done by the Cochrane Breast Institute in the Alps, as your other people. These are actual scientists.
Is both sexes?
Both sexes.
Okay.
All right. Here's number 1. Sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're less attractive when you don't sleep, which is why people on morning shows are always alone.
Yeah. Well, we have the Genucel for that, but still.
People the other day, I don't remember where I was, but somebody said, boy, you look tired for a guy who claims the Genucel works. I said, you can understand something. I said, genetically, I was a raccoon. Now I just look tired.
That's right.
Yeah. 2010, researchers took photos of people who'd slept at least 8 hours the night before and people who hadn't slept in 31 hours. Other participants rated the people in the photos on different criteria. The sleep-deprived people were perceived as more tired, big surprise there, but also as less attractive, less healthy, and sadder. You don't have to keep somebody up for 31 hours to get that.
No.
Being mean.
Yeah, being mean's not... That would age, what is that, age you, it says?
No, this is less attractive.
Oh, less attractive.
2014 Chinese study. Researchers had men and women look at photos of other people displaying neutral expressions. Some of the photos were accompanied by the Chinese words for decent and honest. The others accompanied by the Chinese words for evil or mean. The mean photos were deemed to be the less attractive photos.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I would think there'd be a sex distinction or a gender distinction there.
Unless
because you, women don't like mean people, but men might see mean as aggressive or powerful.
Unless you have that, remember that condition, RBF, wasn't it resting bitch face?
Yeah.
Like Anna Kendrick, where you just look mean, but you're really not.
Yeah.
That's funny because I've got this where I look really super sweet and nice because I smile a lot, but really I'm very mean.
No, you're very mean.
That's the opposite.
That's why we're afraid of you. Yeah. What about contractive body language?
Contracted. Oh, meaning like you fold your hand,
yep.
You fold your arms.
Yep, and slouching.
Yeah.
Make you less attractive. Stress makes you less attractive. I would think so, too. Like if you said, like ask me where we're going for dinner.
Hey, where are we going for dinner?
I don't know. Could you figure something out?
Do you play that game, too? Where do you want to go? I don't care. You pick.
Oh,
no, you.
We used to have a feature on this show called What Do You Want to Do? And we do it every Friday. We should bring that back. What do you want to do? Because we do it every Friday because all over the world, certainly here in Chicago, people were standing around in parking lots or riding around in cars going, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? What, I don't know what you want to do. What do you want to do? Can you just, I don't know what I want to do. What do you want to do? Why can't you decide?
I think you guys should always just decide. Let me just say that for the record. Because, you know, we don't care. Okay, we do care.
No, here's why
you care. You better pick the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't care what we pick as long as we make the decision that you wished you'd thought of.
Bingo.
Yeah, I get it. How about looking too happy or too proud? I don't know this. Well, happiness is generally attractive on women. Girls don't like guys who are too smiley. Is that true?
No, I like when you guys smile.
You've never seen me smile.
You're smiling right now.
I've never heard this. Women don't like men who smile too much?
I can't believe that. No, I like when guys smile.
I don't get this. Burke, Susan Burke is upstairs from Mary Vandeveld this week. Are you turned off by men that don't smile? Or that smile too much, I should say?
I'm going to say that would be a little creepy.
Oh, so like, so if they look like Jack Nicholson, here's Johnny.
Right. There's a fine line between just there being too much of that.
Well, you're a very happy person. Don't you like people that smile?
I do, yeah. I like when guys smile.
And too proud is cocky.
Yeah, but then
again, but I'm telling you, I like confident women.
I was going to say that women like confident men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do right? Do I appear to be too cocky?
No, never.
You.
No.
Spike called me cocky.
Well, that was your nickname.
You sure it wasn't just a personality trait?
Maybe a little both.
Not having a sense of humor. Yeah, that's not very attractive.
No,
obviously.
That's the best
thing.
Same
goes for women.
Yeah, you gotta have a sense of humor.
I love funny people. You know, a lot of people who do what I do are, you know, paid to be funny or you make money being funny. People like that don't like funny people. I love when people are funny.
Oh, I do too. You gotta laugh.
Yeah, I'll always give credit to people being funny, yeah. Unless I'm on stage.
Get cocky.
Laziness. Clever series of experiments in 2004 found that perceived attractiveness depends a lot on traits like helpfulness. In one experiment, researchers asked students in a 6-week course to rate each other on different traits for attractiveness. When they analyzed the results, researchers found that even students who have been rated average at the beginning of the course were less attractive if they've proven to be lazy.
Yeah.
I don't know any circumstance where lazy is attractive.
No.
No.
Right? But this one threw me completely. If you smell too similar or too different.
Really?
Science suggests humans seek out mates who are neither too similar nor different genetically. Well, yeah, I mean, there's certain parts that I don't have that I need.
Huh. I wonder if they mean, like, too much perfume or too much cologne.
Well, I just jumped. Hold on. Story just jumped.
Because you like someone to smell nice, but not overdo it.
2006 study. Researchers recruited heterosexual couples to answer questions about how much they were turned on by their partners and how many other people they'd been with over the course of the relationship. During the course of the relationship.
Maybe they met before the relationship
started.
Yeah, I think
so. Otherwise, it's a cheating study. Meanwhile, the researchers took DNA from the participants' mouths as well as their partners and brought it to the lab for testing. Specifically, they wanted to compare their major histocompatibility complexes. Ben, wasn't I in a movie, or I mean in a band called the Histocompatibility Complex? Wasn't that one of my bands? Wasn't it? I mean, come on, Bennett, speak up.
It was one of my favorites.
Oh, okay.
Didn't you open for Ray Parker?
We did, yeah, in radio. But the study found that partners avoid people that they sense smell too much like them or are too different from them.
Okay, now that's interesting.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. Because, again, you want someone to smell good. Or clean, or at least clean.
Well, I suppose you wouldn't want a man to smell like you because you should smell like a girl.
Right. Oh, that would make sense then. Like if you smelled like lavender, it'd be weird.
Yeah, it would be in a lot of ways.
Right.
But you also don't want something so different. Like you smell like lavender and I smell like sweat. You know, that's not necessarily good either. And finally, if you're tempted to lie about your age or your income, stop it. It's the worst thing you can do. Lying about your income or your age. I never understood people that go out on, I don't know how people do it now. You meet people online, you go out on, in the old days, and by that I mean the 2000s and the 90s and the 80s and the 70s, you could lie about things, and keep it going for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no upset now.
No.
Oh, I lie about my age all the time. I had a guy ask me yesterday how old I was. I went,
oh, you look younger than your age.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you don't look 35 at all.
Thank you, Steve.
Andy, you look older than you are.
I feel older. Thank you.
I'd be laughing. I had a guy, though. Now, how weird is this? This guy asked me point blank yesterday how old I was. You're not supposed to do
what?
That. He did. It was at a party.
That's not smart.
No.
No, it's not smart at all.
Even I know that.
All right, one last thing to help you before we move on. Police Chief David Brown from Dallas, if you have a minute this weekend, or this week, I should say, I hope you'll Google some video on David Brown. He did an interview with Jake Tapper yesterday on CNN. And remarkable guy. He lost his son, his partner, and his brother to gun violence. And he had to stand up this weekend and talk about losing five of his own as police chief of Dallas who were murdered. The other injured policemen, by the way, the other six appear that they're going to make it. Some are already out of the hospital and recovering. But for this police chief to go through what he's gone through and the ultimate pain, to having a son who was bipolar and drug-addled in some way, who one night, 6 or 7 weeks after he became police chief, shot an innocent man in a car with his family. And then when the police responded to that shooting, shot and killed a cop as well, was then killed himself by police. And what Chief David Brown did was arrange a meeting with the victims' families and went to both of them and apologized for his son's behavior and talked to them and comforted them and remains in contact with them now, I guess, 10 years later. I don't know how long he's been chief.
And after losing his son, too.
After losing his own son.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually quietly went to the funerals of both of them on the same day that he buried his son. And by the way, his son committed these murders on Father's Day. I mean, you can't make it up.
No.
Lost his partner, as I said, to gun violence and a brother as well. And Police Chief David Brown, an African-American, stood up Friday morning and said, "We don't get a lot of support much anymore," speaking for all cops, and saying, "Let's not make today one of those days." And what did we hear all weekend? A lot of no justice, no peace marches and different things. There's no upside to creating greater division. Every police department ought to look hard and throw the racists out because there are some. But in the same way, every community that has troubled kids ought to get to those kids while they can and fix them before it's too late. Everybody's got work to do. Everybody's got to work harder. And gross generalizations like cops are killing black kids and gross generalizations like black kids just are gangbangers and don't want anything for their lives. I mean, that doesn't help anybody. So I'm very impressed with Dallas Police Chief David Brown, and hopefully you'll take a look and see if you are as well.